Today you'll be playing with fire, which means that as soon as my sermon is over, you need to put on and keep on goggles for the whole day, for the whole procedure. So don't forget that. We are doing a method we've never done before in here, a technique called calorimetry. Calor means heat. Metry means measurement. Calorimetry is a technique in which you measure the amount of energy in a sample. And the sample can be anything you want. We're using mostly food today, but it doesn't have to be food. It's just the energy content of a substance. For instance, the sticks, you could eat them, but you're not going to get any nutritional value from them, right? Why is that? Yes, we don't have the right enzymes to break apart the cellulose they're made out of. But that doesn't mean there's no energy in it. It's just energy we can't use for our bodies, right? Passes through us. But you can still measure the amount of energy using calorimetry. Now, this brings me to one of my many pet peeves. This is a really stupid, embarrassing episode in science. Namely, that there are two units of energy. There's many more than two units of energy. But there's two that are part of this embarrassment. One unit of energy is the calorie, and another is the calorie. Did everyone see the difference? There is no auditory difference. That's the stupidity of it. They are homophones, meaning they sound exactly the same thing. One of them is spelled calorie. The other one is spelled calorie. The only difference is that one has a capital C and the other one has a lowercase c. And that makes them separate units. That is really stupid. Someone thought it was a good idea, though. Well, an uppercase calorie, which thankfully is kind of on its way out as far as being used anymore is concerned, is sometimes called a food calorie because this is what you typically are talking about when you're talking about calories in food. An uppercase calorie. But an uppercase C calorie is really 1,000 lowercase c calories. So, in other words, an uppercase calorie is 1 kilocalorie. And thankfully, if you look at modern food labels, a lot of them say kilocalories now rather than uppercase calories. But the lowercase calorie, just to specify that I'm talking about lowercase, I'll call a scientific calorie. And it is just one of many possible choices of units for energy, but it is based on water. Specifically, the definition of a calorie, a scientific calorie, is the amount of energy required to raise the temperature of exactly 1 gram of water by exactly 1 centigrade degree. Or 1 Kelvin. They're the same size.
Say that one more time.
Yeah. 1 scientific calorie, lowercase c, is the amount of energy required to raise the temperature of exactly 1 gram of water, exactly 1 degree Celsius, or 1 Kelvin. Now, that means a food calorie, an uppercase calorie, is 1,000 times that. Typically, food labels will say for an adult male, for instance, an average daily intake of energy is 2,000 calories. Well, that's 2,000 kilocalories. 2 million calories, in other words, is the energy processed by living for one day as an adult human. Think about that in terms of the definition of calorie. 2 million calories, one day's worth, is enough energy to heat up a gram of water 1 million degrees. Or, think about it another way, it's enough energy to heat up 1 million grams of water by a degree, which is a lot of energy. You know how hard it is to heat water, right? It's why it's a watch pot never boils, supposedly. Has a high specific heat capacity. Well, I said the definition is based on a gram of water. That's the mass of the water, of course. But under standard conditions, 1 gram of water occupies exactly 1 milliliter of space, of volume. In fact, that's how a milliliter is defined. It's the volume occupied by exactly 1 gram of water under standard conditions. How big is a milliliter? What's another name for a milliliter? Right, a cubic centimeter. So a milliliter is exactly 1 centimeter by exactly 1 centimeter by exactly 1 centimeter. A cube that big. And if you fill that volume with pure water, it takes 1 gram of water to do that. And if you heat that exact amount of water up by 1 Kelvin or 1 centigrade degree, it takes 1 calorie to do that. That's the definition. And your daily intake can do that to 1 million milliliters of water, which is 1,000 liters. Right, 1 liter is 1,000 milliliters, and therefore 1 million, which is 1,000,000, is 1,000 milliliters of water. I mean, 1,000 liters of water. That's a lot of water to heat up in just one day's worth of living. But anyway, calorimetry can be done in different ways. We are going to use a very crude technique today, but it's based on this definition. Because based on the definition, if you burn food or sample, not necessarily food, and use the released heat to heat up a known amount of water, and you measure how much increase in temperature there is, you can figure out, based on the definition of the calorie, how many calories were released by the food, and therefore how many calories were in the food, the energy content of the food. That's calorimetry. I say it's a very crude technique because if you think about this, you're with tongs holding a burning piece of food under a test tube of water. What are the chances that 100% of the released energy is going to go into that test tube? Zero. Right? There's no chance of that happening. For instance, you might hear it crackle. That's part of the energy, the fact that you hear it. You see it lit, that's part of the energy. And a hell of a lot of energy just goes into heating the air around the tube. Plus it takes some time to get your food from the burning burner over to the tube, right? None of that gets transferred to the water. So there's all kinds of heat that gets lost in other ways rather than heating up the water. Therefore, when you make your computations about energy, caloric content of your samples, expect it to be much lower than what you would see on food labels for those types of food. Because you've lost all this. That's the error. And the food label values come from a much more accurate version that's really the same thing but just more accurate technique called bomb calorimetry. Because it uses a very thick stainless steel chamber for the sample called a bomb, because it looks like a little bomb, and because it kind of is a bomb, except it doesn't explode. The bomb opens up, very thick wall, so it can hold a lot of pressure. You put your sample in, whether it's a ground up hamster or whatever you want to measure the content of, and you close it off tightly. And then you pump it full of several atmospheres worth of pure oxygen. Not just air, pure oxygen. So that there is definitely plenty of oxygen for combustion, and therefore when you do light the electrodes, which it's also fitted with, it will burn completely in that bomb. But it's thick enough that it doesn't explode like a bomb. It just completely combusts. Well, that would be a waste if you just had this out in the air. But in bomb calorimetry, the bomb is in a chamber and the bomb is completely immersed in water. Not only water, but water that you very accurately know the volume of beforehand, and very accurately know the initial temperature of. You have to know how much water is being heated, right? Because the same amount of heat is going to heat up a smaller volume by a greater change in temperature. So you have to know the amount of the volume of water, and you also have to very carefully know the change in temperature. So it's very carefully measured at first, and it's very carefully measured after the combustion that happens in the bomb. Since it's in the bomb, though, completely sealed and completely immersed, the only place for that energy to go is through the walls of the bomb and into the water. And therefore, whatever you measure as the change in temperature of the water should tell you 100% of the energy that was released by that sample. That's why it's so accurate. You're going to get part of the way there. You're just going to waste a lot of your heat elsewhere, like I was talking about, or your energy, not necessarily heat. Is that all clear? So you are going, no matter how carefully you do this, it's going to be a low value, lower than reality. But you can still be as careful as possible to get as good results as possible. The biggest mistake you can make, other than not getting your sample under the tube as soon as it starts burning, don't just let it keep burning away from the tube, because that's wasting it. And also, before I forget, don't have your burner, your Fisher burner, while it's burning, anywhere close to your tube, because you don't want that to heat the water up. You want your food only to heat the water up. So keep it away. But anyway, other than those things, the biggest mistake you can make is in measurement of before and after mass, initial and final masses. It's not really important how much gets burned, and depending on the sample, some things burn better than others, more completely than others. So it doesn't matter that everything that is in your sample burns. What's important is that you keep track of how much burned. And the only way you know how much burned is by getting a good mass originally and a good mass finally. What happens in a combustion is that the fuel, which is the food sample, turns into what? What does the fuel become in combustion? Carbon dioxide and water. Water vapor. So two gases. They just become part of the air. They're no longer in the sample. But any part that didn't burn is still in your sample that you measure at the end, right? Therefore, if you get a good change in mass, that's how much burned. And therefore, you can calculate how many calories per gram if you know how many grams actually did burn. But this requires two important things. You're working with pieces of foil, not only to keep the scales clean, but more importantly, to make sure you collect anything that drips or falls off of your sample during the process. Because that has to be weighed. It's not just what's in your tongs at the end, it's anything that falls as well. So be sure to carefully put foil down before you start each trial, each sample, so that the only place it can fall is onto the foil. Therefore, you'll have everything collected, plus what's on your tongs you have to put on your foil as well. To get your initial weight, normally you would think that you would want to zero the scale after you put the foil on, right? Not in this case, though. Because burning things that drip or fall onto the foil are going to stick to the foil. You're not going to be able to take them off. So what you want to do is make sure that foil mass itself is not part of the difference. And therefore you zero the scale first, and weigh your sample plus foil together, that's your initial mass, then you take that same piece of foil, has to be that same piece of foil, to catch all the debris, and you get a final measurement of what's left plus foil. And therefore, when you subtract them, the foil gets subtracted out. You see what I'm saying there? Just make sure that you zero it before you put the foil on the first time, and also zero it before you put your foil on the second time. Then you'll get as good a measurement, as a change in mass as possible. The only other thing